Our guards were awful. Our three starting guards had one assist and seven turnovers. They must think it's a tax credit. It's unbelievable how our starting guards played. And let's talk about our big guys. 2 for 11. How can you go 2 for 11? My wife can score more than 2 buckets on 11 shots because I know my wife will at least shot fake one time. You saw how we turned the ball over. We made 3 turnovers tonight where we just came down and threw them the ball. I swear I thought one time that one of our players said Merry Christmas. I thought it was a gift. I thought they signed a package over. To me, when you've got a young team, it's a lot like house training a puppy dog. You know what? When the dog does something wrong, bad dog. Well, you know, I'm not going to hit him. I'm not going to swat him, but bad dog, get on the treadmill. Well, there was a sniper in the gym. Didn't you see that? I mean, we had guys falling down. I mean, we had a guy snipered at half court. 2 guys snipered at half court. It was unbelievable. I thought Navy SEAL Team 6 was out there. I mean, our guys were coming across. I mean, just nobody around them and just fell down on the ground. How does that happen? And we had a saying at Kansas, sniper.
From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Oh man, what a way to start the show. Sniper! If you're sitting there wondering who was that? That was Barry Hinson. He is Southern Illinois' men's basketball coach. He ripped into his players yesterday after a 73-65 loss to Murray State, calling his team uncoachable. That has to be one of the funniest, most memorable post-game tirades that I can fathom. Hilarious stuff. if you look at that press conference before the show, we talked about this, you know, I would have thought that, you know, if I was a reporter sitting in that press conference and, you know, Barry's going off like that and I would have been dying laughing, especially the sniper part. That's what really got me. And you know what, when you look at it, you know, it went viral. Everyone, so many people are talking about this tirade that he had after the game. And, you know, even, one of his players, decided to tweet about it. He took it kind of personal. Senior forward Devontae Drinkard, he wasn't amused by the rant, and he actually tweeted, after he saw it, quote, "I can't believe the little man had the nerve to call us mama's boys. Shaking my head. I guess this is where our team learns to point the finger." Now, me personally, I had no problem whatsoever with what Barry had to say after the game. None at all. And when you look at, you know, his frustration with this team, again, a 73-65 loss. They've not started off the season well. And, you know, I believe they're with 2-8 right now. And he just lost it. You know, just frustration coming out about his team. Now, in today's society, I want to say this. In today's society, I think that sometimes we just take things a little too personal. He called out his team and said they played like crap, basically. And you know, what are you going to do? He's being honest here. He is the head coach and he has a right to be honest about his team's performance that night. And he actually, and you know what? He was on a Dan Patrick show today and he was some other media obligations. I told you this tirade. I mean, I didn't know who Barry Hinson was until this press conference, but he was on Dan Patrick and I'm listening to him today and they had him on the show. And he doesn't regret anything. He doesn't regret anything that he said other than calling out one of his players. He did call out one of his players by name. And that's the only thing, though, that he regretted. He went on to say, in concerns to his rant on Tuesday night, quote, "I'm not going to fake who I am. I'm an emotional guy, and I love my players. But I was frustrated that their overall with their overall lack of effort. I felt bad about mentioning one of my players' names. That was a mistake. That's the only thing he regrets about the tirade, and I feel him. People, we take things way too serious nowadays. We have to learn how to take criticism. And, you know, his, one of the teammates on the team tweeting, you know, his dislike of the tirade, you know, with them calling them mama's boys and whatnot. I mean, hey, go out there and prove them wrong then. You know what I mean? I saw nothing wrong. I think more coaches need to be more passionate like that. So, hey, Barry, good job, man. And plus, he provided a very, very memorable moment in sports right there. And, gosh, that was great. Sniper. Sniper. All right. Well, welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We have a ton to get to on today's show. And you know what? Today's show, we own our Barbershop Wednesday. It's Wednesday. And we have a very interesting Barbershop Wednesday topic for you all. And we are asking all of you to weigh in, call in and weigh in on this topic. You know our number, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. And today we're going to be talking about an interesting topic. We're going to be talking about tanking, folks, tanking. For those of you who don't know what tanking is, tanking is losing games on purpose so that it could possibly benefit you in the future, whether that be draft status or what have you. Because we all know that the teams with the worst records, specifically when you talk about the NBA, the teams with the worst records, they have the higher chance of getting a top pick in the draft lottery and drafting a huge prospect, either, you know, coming out of college. So it's been talked about and debated about for many years, and we want to talk about it and open the dialogue here on today's Current Sports. What do you guys think about teams losing games purposely, losing games on purpose, to have a high draft pick, in the upcoming draft? We want you to call in right now. This entire hour, we're going to be taking your calls, 517-355-9527. And you know what? Something very interesting, when I was doing my research on this topic and preparing for this debate, if you will, this Barbershop Wednesday topic, if you will, you know, there, if you guys recall, those of you who read ESPN the magazine, there was an article not too long ago, actually this year, around October, by Kelly Dwyer, who's a writer for Yahoo Sports. And an interesting interview came out about it was a former NBA GM, I should say that. NBA general manager who was interviewed by ESPN the magazine. And he talked about tanking. And he actually admitted to tanking the 2013-14 season. But he's doing so anonymously. So we don't know who made these statements, and granted so, because I'm pretty sure many sports fans out there would definitely rallying around this man, I tell you that. But he decided to do the interview, and he did it under the facts that, you know, you can't release my name or anything. I'm going to go anonymous on here, but I'm going to go on record and saying this. And he admitted to tanking the 2013-14 season anonymously. The GM, he detailed his team's plan for that season, and basically the dude wanted to lose a lot of games. He wanted to just go in there and just tank, and possibly get a high draft pick in next year's draft. Now, if I could, really quick, if you all could bear with me here, there are some excerpts, from this interview that I want to read for you guys. He says, quote, "You need superstars to compete in this league, and the playing field for those guys is tilted toward a few big market teams. They are demanding trades and getting together and deciding where they want to go in free agency. It's tough for us to compete with that, so a high lottery pick is all we have." And he goes on to describe, how do you pull off tanking without anyone noticing that you're just throwing games on purpose? He went on to say, quote, "How do you pull it off? First, you talk it over with ownership. I analyzed the team and told them what I wanted to do, the guys I wanted to get rid of, and the guys with future value whom we wanted to keep. We obviously traded away some of our veteran guys who gave us a better chance of winning right now for future draft picks and young players. The owners didn't want to tread water any more than I did. They'd rather go down to the bottom with the hope of coming up, so they signed off on it. Folks, this is an NBA GM, former NBA GM right now, describing how they went about tanking games, saying that he met with ownership, other colleagues of his, sat down, actually had a meeting about this, a meeting, folks, and talked about how they would do it, what guys they would keep, what guys they would get rid of, and how they would go about losing games. So, wow. And he went on to say that they signed off on it. Quote, it wasn't a fight at all. In a different season, it might not make sense, but this draft certainly makes it more appealing. Our coach understands that, too. It's no secret. The coach even understood it. This is unbelievable. The coach even understood it. Okay, our coach understands that, too. It's no secret what we're trying to do, and you can't lie to him anyway or you'll lose all trust. We never really had to tell him because the handwriting is on the wall. He knows exactly what's going on, and he's good with it. Can you believe that? This, again, a former NBA GM who went on the record anonymously, didn't want his name released, and told ESPN the magazine how they went about tanking a season. If that, as a fan, as an individual who loves sports, if you're listening to this and reading, if you read that article, that's got to rub you in a way that sports has never rubbed you before. That's disturbing things, folks. Again, tanking. What do you think about teams losing games purposely in order to have high draft picks and whatnot? Give us a call, and we want to get your thoughts on this. 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. And we're gonna expand this conversation into another realm as well. When you talk about the overall corruption that sports can have, what I mean by that is there's many talks here and there about individuals who, or I should say officials. Attacking it from an official standpoint here, just as an example, especially in the sport of boxing. The sport of boxing was at one time one of the most beloved, coveted sports in American history, especially during the Ali and Frazier days. It was a time when you could watch boxing on local TV, didn't have to worry about pay-per-view. Those days are now long gone. And really the only pioneer that anyone is willing to pay for to watch an exciting fight, if you could even call it exciting, is Floyd Money Mayweather. Other than that, that's about it. That boxing has gone down the drain. And many feel as though that has to be contributed to this something really disturbing is going on in boxing when it comes to referees and how they judge a fight. And people have noticed it. People have noticed certain fights that you look at and you say, whoa, there's no way the other dude could have won. And how did it happen? And it comes down to the judges. We're gonna hop in our current sports time machine really quick. I want to play something for you all. Brandon Larvidane. For those of you who don't know who Brandon Larvidane is, Brandon Larvidane is now a pro boxer from here in the state of Michigan. We actually had Brandon on the show a while back here on Current Sports and interviewed him to talk about referees and if he's ever been involved in a decision in the ring where he clearly felt as though, and many around him felt as though he won the fight, but it went the other way. Here's how my conversation with Brandon went.
Last year, a fight that really sticks out in my mind is, I'm not sure if you've seen this fight, but Timothy Bradley fighting Manny Pacquiao back in 2012. Did you watch that fight at all?
Yes, I did.
And they gave the, it mind boggled me because they gave the decision to Timothy Bradley when in my eyes and in many viewers' eyes, it looked as though Manny Pacquiao was just simply dominating the fight. Have you ever been involved in a bad judging call And what is being done to kind of change this? Because I think it's a problem right now.
I've been in bad with numerous bad decisions on my end. I felt sometimes where I've clearly beat opponents and didn't get the decision, sometimes because of the hometown fighter, sometimes because the people putting on the venue have a certain investments with that fighter. There could be many different reasons as why, too, this happens. But, I mean, I think as overall in the pro ranks, they need to hold the judges more accountable. A lot of times in the situations like Manny Pacquiao, Timothy Bradley, the judges are accountable, need to be held more accountable for what they're doing, and they need to be given consequences for the action. A lot of times they make a bad decision, oh, it's their fault, you know, but nothing actually happens to them. They don't get suspended. They don't get license taken away. They don't get, you know, fined like boxers do. A boxer comes to the gym and has any kind of substance in his body, he gets fined for it.
Right.
Nothing happens to these judges when they make these bad decisions, and it makes the sport, you know, look bad.
Very, very, very bad, man. Now, how do these judges that are ruling these outrageous calls at times, I mean, how do they get in the position that they're in right now to even be sitting behind a judging booth?
My guess is they know some good people in the right places.
Gotcha, gotcha. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Brandon Larvidane, amateur record of 56-12. He'll be turning pro soon, state Golden Glove champion. Brandon, as far as this whole bad judging, this is going on right now, that's really hurting boxing, what is being done to change it that you've seen hands-on?
A lot more recently, the judges have been held accountable for their actions. They have suspended some judges, gave them lengthy suspensions. But, I mean, there has to be more done. People have to, you know, have the right to their commissions. The people involved had to talk to the commissions, had to hold the commissions accountable as well, because they have sanctioned organizations that appoint these judges for fights. And these commission need to be held responsible as well, because if you're appointing a judge to a world-renowned fight, you should know exactly what you're doing, what you're looking for, and how to score a fight.
Right.
Clearly, these judges don't know how to score fights correctly if they have these horrible decisions.
Right. Now, I got to ask you, man, it brings up me to my next point. I was talking with Bob Every, who is a legend in the Lansing community as far as his boxing career is concerned, and he was telling me that a lot of these judges aren't looking at the right things, and he brought up the issue of looking at effort as opposed to results. A lot of judges are just looking at a boxer who's really just giving his all, and it may seem like an illusion that, you know, he's out there, you know, fighting his butt off, but he's not producing any punches. He's not getting results. Have you seen that? And what should a judge be looking for when he's judging a fight?
The key thing to boxing that judges should be looking for is called effective aggression.
Mm-hmm.
You can be aggressive. You can go steam head first all you want to, but if it's not effective, if you're not hitting the person, if the punches aren't landing, if you're not getting any connects, it doesn't matter. You can fight as hard as you want to, but if that aggression isn't effective, if it isn't actually putting damage to the person you're fighting, it should not be scored, it should not be counted, it should not go against the other person if they're just aggressive. You can be aggressive all you want, but if it doesn't work, who cares?
So you have seen judges judge a fight just based on effort?
Sometimes they get out there and they see guys throwing a bunch of punches, and it might hit the guy's shoulder, might hit the guy's arm, might hit the guy's elbow, but it's not scoring cleanly. So they see it as, oh, he's getting up there, he's punching a lot, but he's not scoring. He's not hitting the guy.
Right.
So it shouldn't matter.
Well, that was sitting down with Brandon Larvidane. Brandon, now a pro boxer, describing referees who simply are, you know, a lot of corruption going on with boxing, but referees who are judging fights the wrong way, and therefore really corrupting the sport. So that's our Barbershop Wednesday topic. We want to talk about the situation of tanking when it comes to sports, teams who are just taking losses and losing on purpose in order to benefit themselves in the long run. We want to get your thoughts on it, and also the overall corruption in sports that extends to certain sports such as boxing, where referees are blatantly making the wrong calls. So, call us at 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. We're going to dive right into this. Matt will join me in a second, and we're going to really dive into this and talk about it and give you our thoughts on it. And, again, we want to get your thoughts on it as well. So, don't go anywhere. We're going to come right back, and we also have headliners for you. Don't go anywhere. We're going to take a quick break and come right back. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Well, you know what? Let's get to our quick hit headliners, our Current Sports quick hit headliners for this December 18, 2013. All right, Mark D'Antonio brushed off the notion that he could leave for another job. He said yesterday, quote, "I see Michigan State as the destination, not a stop. It's flattering, but that's the way I see it." D'Antonio D'Antonio is 57 years old right now. He is 63-29 with Michigan State over seven seasons. Consistent with the stability he has built for the program, D'Antonio wants to keep his entire coaching staff also together. That seems much more likely with Pat Narduzzi, of course, the 2013 Broyles Award winner as the nation's top assistant coach. He withdrew as a candidate to become the coach over at UConn. D'Antonio went on to say, quote, yesterday that it's my hope to keep our entire staff together. To have Coach Narduzzi to remain here is a tremendous asset. So there you have it, D'Antonio brushing off any notion that he could possibly be leaving. This at the beginning of the week, you know, his name was thrown in the possible head coaching, search for over at Texas. And now he's completely saying, hey, MSU is my home. Okay, so also want to note that sophomore defensive end Shalik Calhoun said that he will be returning next year for the green and white as well. So, all right, D'Antonio is also a Liberty Mutual Coach of the Year Award finalist. D'Antonio joins the likes of Gus Malzahn, Nick Saban, David Cutcliffe, Art Briles, Urban Meyer. I can go on and on. Fans can actually vote for this. They can vote for their picks, along with coaches from FCS, Division II, and Division III, at www.coachoftheyear.com through December 22nd. All right, according to reports from Scout.com, Sam Webb, and ESPN.com's Tam Van Heren, five-star 2015 wide receiver George Campbell has decommitted from Michigan. Campbell, a 6'5", 198-pounder from Tarpon Springs, Florida, is ESPN.com's number two-ranked player in the 2015 class. Now, Scout.com ranks him number 10 overall. Rivals.com slides him in at number 7. Peter Van Heren said that Campbell hasn't eliminated Michigan from contention, but he's firmly decommitted at this point. So Campbell committed to Michigan back in July, some 18-plus months before he actually has to sign a letter of intent. I tell you, you never know what these young kids are going to do. After his team lost four of their last five games, Detroit Lions head coach Jim Schwartz was asked about his job status at his Tuesday press conference. Schwartz acknowledged his job status isn't exactly on solid ground right now, but didn't see any positives in bringing it up with games left to play, saying, quote, "I understand you guys have a job to do, and this is stuff you guys want to talk about and stuff like that. That's fine. But I don't think it does any good for me or our team to let that be the focus to continue to comment on that. So I think I'll respectfully decline to keep going to the same place with those." Now, Schwartz also said the questions won't affect his team's play, saying, "We're professionals. I wouldn't think so. Everybody has a job to do during the week, and I don't think it's anybody's job to worry about anything other than getting ready for the game this week." So Schwartz acknowledging that his job status is definitely shaky, to say the least. All right, high school basketball roundup for you guys. In girls basketball, Portland tops Okemos 39-30. Charlotte tops Ionia 54-48. Corunna over Owosso 47-22. DeWitt over Eden Rapids 52-41. Dryden over Weberville 44-38. Hazlitt over East Lansing 64-39. Jackson Lumen Christie 64 to Lansing Catholics 56. Williamston tops Eastern 68-21. Waverly over Everett 52-42. Really quickly, a few boys scores. Jackson Lumen Christie tops Lansing Catholic 55-50. Powderville over Bath 52-50. Corunna over Owosso 67-61. Eden Rapids over DeWitt 61-53. Mason over Grand Ledge 48-46. Hole over St. John's 56-45. Waverly taps Everett 54-40, and Eastern taps Williamston 63-54. And also in action last night was the MSU men's basketball team. Thanks to injuries and foul trouble, the MSU men's basketball team looked to its bench to carry the load versus North Florida. For the first time seemingly all year, they responded. Russell Bird scoring 10 points. Gavin Schilling had 7, and Alex Gona added 6 to help propel the Spartans to a 78-48 blowout win. The usual suspects were there too, with Adrian Payne finishing with 19-7 and B.J. Brandon Dawson adding 12-7. Gary Harris, Matt Costello, that is, Travis Trice, they set out with various ailments, but the Spartans had plenty to take care of North Florida. Hernandez, wrongful death suit. Former New England Patriots tight end Aaron Hernandez has been sued by the family of a man he's accused of killing while police investigate the death of another person on the proprietary of the of that case. The wrongful death lawsuit was filed Monday in Superior Court in Massachusetts, according to the Herald News. Now, Hernandez has pleaded not guilty to murder on the in the June 17th shooting death of Odin Lloyd. All right, MJ, he can't sell his mansion, folks. Michael Jordan, he failed to sell his 56,000 square foot mansion in Chicago via auction, despite offering it up with a bargain price of $21 million. The house, quote unquote, will be auctioned again next year. The house sits on 7.4 acres, features an NBA regulation size basketball court, a pool pavilion tennis court, putting green, 9 bedrooms, and get this, 15 full and 4 half bathrooms. That's unbelievable. You can actually take a virtual tour of MJ's mansion online. It is something to see. Unbelievable stuff there. And also to close out our current sports quick hit headlines, former 2014 MSU football commit Chris Durkin has committed now to Virginia Tech. The 6'4", 220-pound signal caller from Youngstown, Ohio, is a top 20 player at his position on most recruiting websites at hovers between 3 and 4 star range. Now, Durkin is the second QB to commit to VTech for 2014 and will join a competition that features several young QBs vying to replace Logan Thomas. All right, well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and comment on any of those, call us at 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. And today we are taking your calls throughout this entire hour, and we want you to weigh in on a topic in sports that doesn't get talked about, frankly. It gets shied away from quite often whenever it's brought up. The idea of tanking in sports, teams who lose games purposely or don't shell out 100% effort in order to get a high draft pick in the upcoming draft or what have you. And we'll also talk about the overall corruption in sports and the politics that go down in sports in general. Call in and give us your thoughts on it, 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. Matt Lutke now joins me as we dive right into our Barbershop Wednesday topic. And, Matt, I tell you what, man, when I was doing research and read this article of this anonymous GM who comes out and talks about his plan and what he went through actually meeting with his fellow colleagues and sitting down with him and saying, this is how we're going to do this. Do you guys agree with it? They agree with it. The head coach agree with it, and they went about it. That kind of stuff baffles me, and there's no place in sports for it. But I think, you know what, we know that it exists. And it shocks me that a GM would come out and say it. But he did it anonymously.
Al, I got to say, I don't blame him one bit. And I don't think you can blame the teams at all, because that's the way the league is set up. And I think the NBA is, I think that's the biggest culprit when we look at tanking.
Yeah. When you talk about tanking, because the NBA comes up. Yeah.
Because they have smaller rosters, and one player can kind of change the complexion of your team. But if a guy's saying that, you know, the organization is at least on the same page as far as we will not be good this year, I don't think you can blame him. I mean, teams make moves all the time, and there's definitely a difference between tanking and building for the future. And teams can set themselves up to fail in the short term while setting themselves up nicely for long term. I mean, you can look at some of the trades that have happened recently in the NBA. Mm. Let's look at the Celtics and the Nets. So the Celtics deal them Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Jason Terry. You know, they're big, three of their probably top four players from last season. to get worse right now. They hire a new coach. They're rebuilding. They're you know, just gutting the team because in the NBA, it is much better to be very bad than it is to be middle of the road. Mm-hmm. You have to bottom out before you can come back up to the top, or else you're just going to sit in the middle
forever.
I totally agree with it.
You agree with
it. The league has set it up so that tanking, or I guess it's not tanking, just, you know, going, you know, full bore at being bad is good for you. All right, look at some stats here.
First of all, I'm definitely disagreeing with you on this.
Okay.
And
good.
You know what? From this standpoint, I think that when you look at how the draft lottery, I'm going to take the draft lottery right now and kind of attack it from that aspect. When you talk about the NBA draft lottery, the lottery system was created to combat tanking in the NBA. That's something that GMs wouldn't come out and specifically say that. Stern wouldn't come out and specifically say that. When you look at the format of the lottery now, there's no guarantee that the team who has the worst record in the NBA will have the first pick in that upcoming year's draft, because it all happens by quote-unquote chance nowadays. I don't know what the statistic of it is now, but if you look at it, I don't believe the past few seasons the worst team in the NBA has not gotten the top pick in the draft. So there's no guarantee, and there's a risk you run now if you are going to tank in the NBA. Looking at it from that aspect, Matt.
Al, there is and there isn't, and I'm glad that you brought this up. Mm-hmm. Okay, so last year the Orlando Magic were the worst team in the NBA. They had the worst record. They went 20-63. They had a 25% chance of getting the top pick. The next worst team was Charlotte. They had a 19.9% chance. After that, Cleveland at 15.6. Of course, Cleveland ended up getting that top pick.
Right.
Either way, though, Orlando had a 64% chance of getting a top three pick and a 100% chance of getting a top four pick. Mm-hmm. So if you are going to be bad, you are going to pick in the top four, even with the lottery. The problem with the lottery is teams that are really bad are still basically assured that they will get a top three, top four pick. Teams that are just like, maybe you're the sixth worst team in the league, you might be picking ninth or 11th. Those are the teams that really get the brunt of it. And it's because Orlando, they went, I believe, 41-41 one year when they had Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah.
And then they got the number one pick again. So they started weighing the lottery. So it's not really a true lottery anymore, where it's just, you know, the 13 or 14 worst teams all have an equal shot.
And I tell you what, when you look at it, from this standpoint, because if you look at last year's draft class, you know, with the Oladipos and the Burks and whatnot, you know, there were many that said this is probably one of the worst, one of the weakest draft classes that we've seen in quite some time.
Yep.
And that's another risk that you run when you talk about it, because looking at last season, now, personally, when you look at it, now you looked at last year's draft class, I didn't think it was as bad as people made it. I think that Oladipo is a great player. He's really coming to his own. Now that Trey Burke's starting to show that he can really be a really, really good player in this league. But at the same time, when you look at it, you never know how good these college kids are going to be. Now, granted, compared to other sports, when you talk about the game of basketball is set up where it's a type of game where one man can impact both sides of the ball. One man can make a tremendous impact. And we've seen many young players come out and really impact teams right away. While we've seen, on the contrary, we've seen the exact opposite. But I think not knowing how good an upcoming draft class is going to be, especially nowadays, where, you know, we've seen many NBA, like, okay, I'll take a Kwame Brown, for instance. Brown, highly recruited guy. He goes, you know, one of the top recruits coming out the draft. He comes in the NBA and is a total flop, period. So, if would you get drafted by the Wizards, I think it's rookie year.
He did.
Get drafted, but Michael Jordan makes the brilliant decision to draft Kwame Brown. He comes in the Wizards and he's absolutely terrible. So, just for instance, if the Wizards tanked and got a high draft pick, maybe end up getting number one, you never know how good these kids are going to be. And that's another argument I have. I have a problem with that because you're running it's a crapshoot if you're going
to
do it.
It's a crapshoot, but at least you're getting a young talent who has a chance to improve your team rather than floating and getting a guy later in the draft who's not as likely to be that can't-miss prospect. Obviously, it's a crapshoot. I mean, all drafts are. I mean, people find guys who are undrafted who come in and have a bigger impact in the NBA than guys who are top five picks. Right. I mean, we haven't seen Otto Porter at all this year. He was the third pick in the draft. It's not a guarantee at any level. But
don't you think that if you're going to – the risk of tanking – I think it's just too risky because I wouldn't put, you know, the risk of tanking isn't worth the risk of not knowing how good a player coming out of college is going to be.
I mean, I guess, but I think tanking is almost overused, and being bad is different than tanking. I think an example of tanking to me was 2012, the end of the year. Mm-hmm. The Golden State Warriors are in position to get a top 10 draft pick, but they're not sure where they're going to pick. They wanted Harrison Barnes. So for the last 2 or 3 weeks of the season, Stephen Curry sits out. You know, their star player, the guy who sells all the tickets, he sits out so that they can kind of, you know, torpedo their record, basically,
See, that's,
to get a higher spot. That is tanking.
Bad. Right. That's tanking. Wrong.
Being bad and, you know, what the Jazz are doing right now, they're 6-21, and we can talk about Trey Burke's injury all we want. Either way, they're not a good team.
Right.
The Jazz are bad, but that's because they took on, you know, Andres Biedrins and Richard Jefferson's contracts, basically strapping themselves for this year so they don't have any flexibility, but they get draft picks in the future. So being bad now to help yourself out in the future and stockpile those assets is not tanking.
Well, this is when I talk about tanking, this is what I have a problem. This is what I have a problem with, Matt, here. I have a problem with teams purposely putting themselves in a position where they know they're going to lose. Where they know they're going to lose, and especially at the end of the season, where teams just know that they're like, okay, let's lose it. I think they sit down and actually map this out and say, okay, we're in a position right now. We're competing with this team and this team and this team. We're gonna start losing some games here. I mean, you have an NBA GM who went anonymously on ESPN Magazine and basically just laid out how they're going to do it. I have a problem with that because the essence of sports here, Matt, is to win. At the end of the day, it sends the wrong message. You're cheating. You're cheating the most valuable asset when it comes to sports, that being your fans. Your fans are the ones who you know, show their loyalty, who pay their tickets, who come out to each and every game, and they go there and expect to see the best product that can possibly be put on the court for that team. If you don't do that and teams are going out there putting, you know, the third string point guard out there on the court, And really not showing any effort, where the GM doesn't care, the coach doesn't care, you're cheating the fans, and that is a cardinal sin in the world of sports.
I can see that. I totally agree with that. And especially the part where you say late in the season, teams decide, all right,
it's terrible.
We're calling
and
it a year.
You know, another thing is that we haven't talked about, there's a domino effect to that as well, because, okay, for an example here, it really changes playoff seeding in certain instances. Because let's say you got the Chicago Bulls and you got the Miami Heat. I'm just making up this. Top two teams in the East. And near the end of the season, they're trying to compete to see who's going to have home court advantage.
Right.
Those games near the end of the year start impacting if they get that home court advantage and where they seed and what teams they play in that top eight. If you're playing a team who's tanking the season, if you're playing a team who, no matter what team it is, who's tanking the season, if the Bulls are playing a team that's tanking the season, and let's say the Heat are playing a team like the Pacers that are competing still in the playoffs and still going out there and trying to win every game,
right?
Those games matter and can impact. They can impact the playoffs, and
yeah,
that's another problem I had.
And that's valid because it does affect teams that are actually playing for something. But you can look at teams that. You know, the teams that everybody thought were setting themselves up to get a high draft pick this year. The Suns, the Jazz, the Celtics, the 76ers. Those are the top four. People were saying those teams are, you know, they're either rigging for Wiggins or they're going to be sorry for Jabari.
Right.
You know, it's gotten to the point where they have nicknames.
I've heard it. It's clever. Right?
Suck for Luck was, you know, when the Indianapolis Colts were terrible. That was probably the best one.
I like
the
that.
Great ring to it.
Suck
but
for Luck, got
you
it.
You look at the Suns, they're 14-9. The Celtics are 12-14 and first in their division. Granted, their division is the worst in NBA history, but they're first in the division. They're in the playoffs right now. The 76ers, they're 7-19, but they, you know, they started out 3-0. They beat the Heat. They're not awful. They're clearly rebuilding. They're playing for the future. They traded for Nerlens Noel out of Kentucky, knowing that he would not be able to play this season because he's nursing a torn ACL. But they also got a first-round draft pick from the Pelicans next year. So they're going to be loaded with young assets next season. Mm-hmm. If you are a fan, do you get that angry if a team is taking a year off where they are just going to be bad? They're going to be bad, and they know it.
The average fan, especially from the youth, let's talk about the kids here.
Okay.
Kids who look at this and they see players, you know, kids don't get, I don't think, because I tell you what, when I was little, when I was watching NBA or any sports for that matter, the politics of the NBA, that was the last thing in my head. It went completely over me. I'm just watching players. I want to see my team win.
Right.
They don't get that. And I think at the same time, though, even though I was 8, 7 years old watching the games, I could tell when players were giving a lack of effort and not playing to the best of their ability. I could see that because I'm watching that on the court. The politics, I don't understand that. For kids to go out there and see, you know, their idols, who they look up to, their heroes, if you will, in many regards, go out there and give a half-hearted effort, that sends a terrible message, and it really takes away the essence of what sports supposed to be about. You're taught to go out there and play your hardest each and every time you step out there, and it makes the product, especially when you talk about, because the NBA is known, it takes a bad rep sometimes for players taking days off. I've had this argument countless times. Players taking days off, and the overall brand of the NBA gets diluted when you see things like that. And it upsets me. It upsets me being a longtime fan of the NBA. It upsets me, and it's bad.
No, I can see that. And effort, you know, having talent on your roster is one thing, but not playing hard is another. And I agree with you there, too. Because, you know, if you're going to – maybe you just, you know, have guys who are young, but at least if they're giving their all, you can still be terrible and have a team that plays hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's, you know, those aren't mutually exclusive. I just think that if the league is going to reward being bad, teams are going to continue doing this. It's not a team thing. I don't think you can hold the organizations themselves accountable when the league is actively rewarding being as terrible as possible right now. So I think
they tried it with the lottery, but the lottery isn't a foolproof system.
And they balked when, you know, the actual, you know, meaning of the lottery came about, and the Magic did get that number one pick when they already had one of the most talented players in the NBA in Shaquille O'Neal.
Right.
And they were far from the worst team in the league.
Would you tank?
Would I tank? Absolutely.
Absolutely. I can't agree with that, man.
I don't know if I would tank. I guess it depends on what we mean by tank.
Would you lose games on per... Okay, let's say...
Would I build my roster to be bad now, to be good later? Yes, absolutely. Let's say
Aaron.
I
want to ask Aaron a way on this. I want to get Aaron, too. Aaron, because when you look at this, Matt, Matt, you're saying you would tank if near the end of the season. Let's say near the end of the season.
Say I'm 10th place in the Eastern Conference.
Right. Okay.
If I'm going to be the 10th place team, I know that I'm not going anywhere if I'm picking 18th. I mean, there's only been a few players who are picked after, you know,
Well, let's
the
say before the season,
so.
Though. Before the season,
before
if you come into a season knowing that your team is not going to be competing with the Miamis and the Pacers of the league.
If I know that it's not going to be my year, I'm going to be playing for the future. Absolutely. Let's say I have a veteran guy with a couple years left. I'm going to trade him to a contender for a draft pick later on in the future.
That's crazy.
That's called smart business.
That is crazy, and I cannot agree with that.
I'm not going to be able to beat Miami this year anyway.
I'm going to at least try my darnest to go out there and pop
LeBron James.
Oh, my players
are going to try hard, but we're going to build to make them successful later on in their careers. Playing the long game.
That sounds like a straight-up politician right now. Aaron, would you tank a season? What are your thoughts on it, Aaron?
Well, apparently I'm a politician along with Matt. I mean, it's smart management to me. I mean, why would you not do it? I mean, like Matt said, you're in the middle of the road, and you know the only way to get to the top is, frankly, to get to the bottom and start from ground up. I mean, could you argue that the Pistons have kind of done that?
No, I don't think the Pistons have tanked.
No, well, maybe not tanked. But
I mean, they should have, arguably. They should have.
They were at the top, obviously, with the championship, and they started falling down, kind of got in the middle of the road, and then they kept falling. Did they reach the bottom, and now they've kind of just completely revamped?
I think the reason, if you look at the Pistons right now, I think the reason the Pistons made the moves that they did, because they were in a moment of desperation. Joe Dumars was in a moment of desperation, and I think that Joe Dumars realized that if I don't make the playoffs this year, something bad is going to happen for me. And that's what provoked him to make the moves that he made.
Right, and those are fine. I think the moves he made last offseason are fine. And, yeah. And you know, the results are playing out. They look pretty good. I mean, they're not great by any stretch, yeah, they're much better than they have been. But what I'm saying is, let's go a few years back, you're Joe Dumars, and we'll leave out the ownership thing, because that was a big part of it. That's why he made the Charlie Villanueva signing and the Ben Gordon signing, because he knew, if we don't win, I might get fired by the new owner, whoever comes in.
Exactly. So he got in desperation mode.
Let's move that off the table. There's, you know, ownership is solid. You know, he knows he's going to be safe. Why would you spend all that money on free agents who you're clearly reaching for when you can keep that cap space, maybe sign a couple of young guys for nothing? Maybe they're not quite the level of players that Gordon or Villanueva are, and bottom out, have a bad season. You know, would it have taken 5 years to get the Pistons back to mediocrity, or would it have taken 3 years and they would have soared up the standings?
So from a business standpoint, I see totally where you're going from here. You bottom out, you know what I mean?
And possibly
get some great draft picks coming up. You know, you're guaranteed a top 10, top 5 draft pick. Get a great player and start from the bottom up. The problem that the thing that I have a problem with is just the overall message that this sends. And you're cheating the fan. Did you guys not care about the fan?
No, I totally see that. But let's say,
if you were a true fan, would you not
understand what your team is doing?
Come on now. A true fan? How do you define that?
I don't know. Somebody who loves the organization.
A true fan wants to see their team win. A true fan wants to show up at every game and wants to see effort.
So a true fan wants to see a team win 43 games every year? Or does a true fan want to see a team grow from a bottom feeder to an NBA champion?
Stop it. That's you're living a fairy tale land right now.
A true fan
wants to see their team, the best product on the court, playing hard every single night. A true fan doesn't show up and turn on my TV and watch the Pistons and say, oh boy, I hope they lose another one so we can get a high draft pick.
Well, you probably should have been doing that the last 4 years, Al.
That sounds crazy. Does that not sound crazy? Aaron.
You know what it reminds me of? It's sort of like a business. Say you open up a restaurant or something or whatever the business might be. Usually for the first couple of years, you're probably going to be, you're not going to make a lot of money.
It's a
building process. You know you're not going to make a profit because you got to cover all the upfront. Unless you were just a billionaire or a millionaire and you just had the money.
Your chefs are still going to put out the best ravioli or soup.
I get that. But I might not have the
money to pay for the best chefs.
But as a whole, you have to take your losses for a couple of years to build up to, because you got to build your brand. You got to make sure you do have. Maybe your chefs at the beginning aren't great. You don't know what they're going to bring to the table. You got to get a wait staff, so on and so on. You got to have a good bartenders, all that.
But you're still going to shoot to have the best chef and waitress and bar. They're not going to take any nights off.
Right. No, I agree with that. But you as a whole organization are going to take a hit for that for a couple of years until you can get where you want to be, because you're going to be at the bottom. You're not going to be at the top. You're going to be at the bottom. You're going to have competition to deal with. If we're in New York City and you open up a new restaurant, you're not just going to be, oh, hey, everyone, let's go to the new diner that's been open for a week because it's the best of the best.
But in order to get to a point of relevancy where you start competing with the best of the best restaurants, you have to put out a product that people enjoy.
And that's going to take time.
But you can still try your darnest to have a product that people enjoy coming to and enjoy watching. And if you tank, that is not doing that at all. I kind of think, your restaurant kind of falls flat, because I think if you put out let's just say you put out some mediocre pizza or something, like if the customers don't come and you don't, if you don't build it, they won't come.
Right, but...
And building it in the NBA...
But there's 10 other restaurants in the same city. in the NBA, it's not like there's another NBA team in the same city, right, unless what, you are yeah. in New York or Los yeah. Angeles.
Someone's always going to show up to the game.
Right. You
no matter how bad the Pistons are, someone shows up.
They still had, what, like 3,000 fans
there
last
so
year?
Bad.
I mean, it was
so bad. You
terrible.
Guys know it was so bad to go to look at. It's still bad, to be honest with you. If you look at the Pistons game now, it's getting better. But if you look at in those stands, there are empty seats left and right because they haven't been to the mountaintop in quite some time.
But do you think it would have been like that had the Pistons decided, let's focus on getting just young players who maybe aren't as good right now, but who will grow into roles and who will be joined by young,
top-flight players? But you're taking a crapshoot
because
you don't know how good they're going to be, how good they'll grow into roles.
Yeah, but I mean, look at teams like the Bucks. The Bucks tried to sign players. They wanted to compete for a playoff spot. Mm-hmm. So they sign a bunch of guys near the start of the season to try and improve their team. They're 5-19 right now. So even the guys you're signing in free agency, you don't know. You have no idea if they're going to pan out.
Exactly.
I mean, it's all a crapshoot. It's not just the draft. It's just players in general.
I just think at the end of the day, the biggest problem when you talk, when I go back to it again, the biggest problem they have with tanking is that you're cheating the fans. You're cheating the fans, that's you can't do that, man. You cannot do that.
But at least the fans have hope for the future. That's the thing. Like, you can be, you know, if
so
you're
hope is all. That's all you need.
Hey, if you're a Celtics fan, even if they weren't 12-14, you're still happy because they have three picks from Brooklyn. You look at how terrible Brooklyn is. Those are going to be good picks.
Bad.
You have the right to trade in 2017. It just seems like they're setting themselves up for a decade of success rather than having 1 year where they're mediocre. That's what I'm saying.
But having that year of mediocrity does not guarantee that you're going to be good in the future.
No, it certainly doesn't. But
what?
Having five number one picks over the next 3 years certainly helps your chances. Certainly
3 years?
Helps your
That's
chances.
That's a long time. Oh, okay. All right, we have a caller, Matt. Okay, Kamiya, how you doing? Welcome to Current Sports, Kamiya.
I'm doing pretty good. How y'all doing today?
Good.
I was just going to say, even though I think that definitely would be unethical as a fan, if I knew that my team was going to take a dive for a season to try to guarantee that we'd almost be on top, at least almost, in the seasons following after that, as a fan, I would be okay with my team taking the dive. I would still say that's unethical, but...
Come here. So you're telling me that if your team, your favorite team, goes out there and they give half-hearted effort, they take a season, and they go out and possibly get a top draft pick, not knowing how good that draft pick is going to be, you're okay with that as a fan?
Yeah, because instead of being in a lose-lose, because if we're already just horrible, I'm going to be the fan because I'm a fan. I'm going to be a fan regardless. But if we're already horrible and we have no guarantees, and we're going to just take a tank to get a hope to be better, yeah, I'd take a losing season and I'd still stick with them to see what we're going to get. I would do it, yeah.
Thanks a lot for the call, Camille. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
no, I just can't agree with that. I cannot agree with that. We need to have a current sports poll. Go on facebook.com/currentsports. I want to have a poll. As a fan, would you want your team to tank with the possibility or hope that they will, you know, get some top draft picks in the next few years and become a relevant team and possibly compete for a championship? That's crazy. I can't believe I just said that. That's crazy to me because from my standpoint, man, I'm a competitor. I've grown up in a home where I'll compete about everything. You know what I mean? And just knowing that I'm going to go out there and have a mediocre team and put out a sloppy product, and I see that they may not be the best players. They're not competing with the best. But just knowing that I'm going out there in a losing state mentality already and having that mentality and letting it infest my team, that's ludicrous.
Well, you're not alone in that because I actually have a quote here from Coach K.
Okay.
Who knows a little something about winning. He said, if that's happening, shame on whoever is doing it. As an American, I wouldn't like to think that an American team would ever want to lose or create situations where you would want to lose,
Preach.
He said.
Preach.
I can't even fathom. I can't go there. I can't believe that would happen. Maybe I'm naive and going to read a fairy tale after this.
Coach K, my brother, I feel you 150%.
But at the same time, Coach K has never coached in the NBA. He's never had to build a team like that because he coaches at Duke, So he gets all the top players anyway.
But still, he's talking about the essence of just of losing on purpose. That's just crazy. That's not American. You can't call yourself an American and say that. Lou.
Lose now, win later. Win a lot more later.
We have another caller, Lou on line one. How you doing, Lou? Welcome to the show.
Good, Al. Good to talk to you guys. Just before 2 o'clock here, I just wanted to give you my support also, Al.
Thank you, Lou.
You're very welcome. Because and it's that losing mentality. Once you say 1 year that, you know, it's okay, let's just pile it or pack it in here, then your team starts to become okay with losing. And I'm going to bring up hockey shortly because I know that a little bit better. But the Edmonton Oilers, they've had 3 consecutive years of number one draft pick. They are still the last team in the Western Conference.
Beautiful example.
Their veterans have become okay with losing, and they don't know how to teach those young draft picks how to become good winning players now.
Right.
And that's all I got to say. So there you go, Al. Keep fighting the good fight.
Thanks a lot, Lou. That's a perfect example. Perfect example where you got top draft picks 3 years straight, still you're throwing up L's left and right. I mean,
does 3 players make a hockey team though?
But Matt, that's a perfect example of a team tanking,
right?
Getting top draft picks, and just that essence of losing infested the entire team, and they're in a bad situation right now. Come on, man!
I mean, look,
it's un-American.
Look at the Blazers. 2 years ago.
Okay, 2 years ago.
They're terrible. Don't win any games, basically. They get Damian Lillard. That's a guy who changes a franchise.
Nobody knew Damian Lillard was going to be what he is today.
He's a top 7 pick.
Nobody knew that Damian Lillard. If you sit there and tell me that you knew that Damian Lillard was going to come in the league and set it on fire,
I'm just
like he is
saying
today,
it makes a lot of sense to try and play for a higher draft pick like that than it does to sit in the 15 range and just continue losing. Let's say.
Un-American.
You are a general manager. Your team is in 10th. Would you rather bottom out? Maybe you're nearing the trade deadline.
From a business perspective?
You're nearing the trade deadline. Would you rather bottom out and give your fans hope that you're going to get a Jabari Parker? Let's say Jabari Parker is on the board. We know he's good.
We know. Okay.
There's no doubt about it. That kid is a good player. Would you rather give your fan base 15 more losses this season and the hope that you have Jabari Parker for at least 5? Or would you maybe sign somebody, make a playoff run, finish 8th, and lose in the first round?
From a competitive standpoint, I'm going out there trying to win every single freaking game I can. I'm putting the best product out there, and I'm not having that mentality even come close to my team.
Okay.
Period. At all. I understand the business side of it.
Right, and I understand your side of it.
And I can't agree with it, though. I cannot agree with it, Matt.
That's fair.
All right, well, time flies. Thanks to Lou and other callers we had and those who weighed in on this. Tomorrow we should have Robert Vinnie, who is I'll tell you what, Matt, this guy is a walking just dictionary of just MSU football knowledge as we prepare for the Rose Bowl now. Rose Bowl coverage from Pasadena, of course, from Current Sports, but he will be on the show tomorrow. Also, we possibly will have Jeff Wanch, head Okemos boys varsity basketball coach. He should be on the show tomorrow as well. So, yeah, tune in. It's going to be a good time. Again, thanks for all those who weighed in. Thanks a lot to Matt and Aaron. I see where you guys are going. I'm just not hopping on that ship, baby. All right, well, thanks a lot to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. As always, take care, have one fantastic Wednesday, and be easy, people.